I want you to imagine just for a second surviving a truly horrific car crash.
Oh, man.
Right? Like we're talking about the kind of impact that literally shatters metal, the kind that
Dang.
leaves you in an intensive care unit for months and just, fundamentally alters the trajectory of your life.
The total nightmare scenario.
Exactly. So after all that sheer physical trauma, right, after the bones finally knit back together and you were, cleared to go home, you are left with this terrifying lingering symptom.
Okay, what is it?
Your left eye is completely blind.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it isn't just blind, it is physically frozen in place, like unable to track or move and permanently deeply bloodshot.
That sounds
It
agonizing.
is. Every single time you look in the mirror, that eye is staring back at you, acting as this visceral, inescapable reminder of the absolute worst day of your life.
A constant trigger.
But now I want you to imagine walking into a room, sitting down in a chair, and just curing that eye.
Hey, what?
Curing it. Restoring the vision, unfreezing the muscle, and clearing the inflammation entirely. And doing all that in under 30 minutes.
That sounds completely impossible.
Right. But the craziest part is the only thing you did to achieve this medical impossibility was talk about a cloud.
A cloud.
Literally a cloud.
It sounds like a complete violation of, every anatomical and medical rule we rely on to understand human biology.
Sounds like pure fiction. But exploring the mechanics of how that actually happened is our mission for today's deep dive.
I'm so ready for this.
We are unpacking a fascinating, rigorously documented case study from a therapist named Clint Matheny. He used this highly specific linguistic technique known as clean language.
Clean language, right?
Yeah, to cure a man's physical blindness and his severe PTSD in just a single, incredibly brief session. So, okay, let's unpack this because reading through the source material, it felt less like reading a clinical psychology paper and more like, I don't know, opening a medical mystery novel.
Oh, for sure.
Only instead of a hotshot neurosurgeon wielding a scalpel to fix a damaged nerve, the hero is a therapist
Oh.
armed with nothing but bizarrely simple, meticulously structured questions.
Yeah, and I think it is crucial to establish right from the start that we are not looking at magic here, or faith healing, or some parlor trick.
Right, definitely not.
We are looking at a profound, almost jarring demonstration of the mind-body connection. And it's all driven by a neurological mechanism called memory reconsolidation.
Memory reconsolidation.
Exactly. Today's deep dive is really designed to fundamentally challenge how you understand the physical manifestations of psychological trauma.
Because we usually separate those, right?
We do. Modern medicine often forces the mind and the body into two distinct silos. Treating a physical injury in one department and emotional trauma in another.
Right, the body shop and the mind shop.
Exactly. But this specific case shatters that divide. It shows that sometimes a frozen muscle isn't a mechanical failure at all. It's actually an emotional memory that has literally anchored itself in physical tissue.
That is so wild to think about. But to understand the cure, we have to first understand the collision,
Right.
both the literal collision on the asphalt and the neurobiological collision that happened inside this man's brain. So our source details an accident from August 1st, 1995.
Okay.
A man named Jay, who was actually a colleague of Clint Matheny, was hit by a garbage truck.
The garbage truck. Oh, man.
We are talking about a devastating high-velocity impact. G spent 2 full months in intensive care.
2 months just in the ICU.
2 months of machines, emergency surgeries, and fighting to simply stay alive. And
Yes.
then that was followed by another 4 months recovering at home.
When you look at the timeline of trauma recovery, it is often in that aftermath, like 6 months post-accident, when the immediate fight for survival ends and the dust kind of settles, that the central nervous system reveals the true extent of the systemic damage.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Because when Anthony finally sees Jay half a year after the crash, Jay is just drowning in symptoms. He is dealing with intense explosive anger, severe post-traumatic stress disorder, and of course that shocking physical anchor we mentioned. His left eye is entirely immobile, bloodshot red, and devoid of vision.
It's just locked up.
Completely locked. But the source drops this fascinating detail about Clint Matheny himself.
Oh, right, his job.
Yeah. At the time of this session, Matheny was balancing two radically different professions. He was a part-time psychotherapist and a full-time FAA radar air traffic controller.
Which is just, I mean, what a combination.
Right.
But think about it. An air traffic controller's entire cognitive existence revolves around guiding chaotic, high-speed objects to a safe landing to prevent total disaster.
That is so true.
You look at a screen filled with overlapping blips, and your job is to identify the patterns and create order out of potential catastrophe, and you have to do it without panicking.
Which raises an incredibly compelling thought, right? Because an air traffic controller is essentially a master of high-stakes, literal pattern interruption. You have to wonder if that specific background made Matheny perfectly suited to untangle a severely traumatized human mind. I mean, he wouldn't be overwhelmed by the chaos of Jay's symptoms. He would just be looking for the intersecting flight paths of his trauma.
That is such a great way to put it, because if you map that onto the state of Jay's nervous system at that moment, it was exactly like an overwhelmed radar screen.
Just blips everywhere.
Right. When someone experiences profound, life-threatening trauma, the brain doesn't just neatly file the event away in a chronological folder.
It doesn't just say, okay, that's done now.
No, not at all. The amygdala, the brain's threat detection center, essentially hijacks the system. It traps the autonomic nervous system in a highly reactive, constant state of emergency.
So it's stuck.
The body gets locked in a fight, flight, or freeze state because, neurologically speaking, the threat is still happening in the present tense.
And in Jay's case, he was experiencing a literal, localized freeze state in his ocular muscle.
Exactly. But the text reveals the underlying layer of this trauma, which explains the intensity of that physiological freeze.
Okay, what was underneath it?
Well, the collision with the garbage truck triggered a profound, overwhelming fear of immediate death.
Naturally.
But that massive spike in existential terror didn't just relate to the truck. The chemical flood of fear unearthed a deeply buried, unresolved trauma.
Oh, wow.
It brought up the grief and anger over a childhood friend who had actually died of cancer years prior.
Oh, man. So the car crash essentially blew the lid off an entirely different, much older box of trauma.
Yes, precisely.
The existential threat of the truck reawakened the helplessness he felt when his friend died.
His brain was overloaded by the present danger, and the neural pathways just short-circuited. They fuse the present threat with the past grief.
That is intense.
The physical paralysis of the eye was the manifestation of a nervous system experiencing total gridlock from those compounding traumas. The eye was receiving constant, unrelenting signals from the sympathetic nervous system to brace for an impact that was both happening right now and had already happened decades ago.
So we have this incredibly complex, layered trauma.
Yeah.
A garbage truck collision structurally entangled with childhood grief, resulting in a frozen blind eye.
Yeah.
And we go from that massive complexity to the intervention. And the intervention is shockingly, almost absurdly simple.
It really is.
It's a 30-minute session. Our source provides the exact transcript of this dialogue, which utilizes clean language, a therapy model originally developed by a psychologist named David Grove.
Right, David Grove.
And the dialogue reads completely differently from anything you'd expect in a clinical setting.
Because the linguistic structure of clean language is specifically designed to bypass the analytical parts of the brain entirely.
Okay, so here is the actual progression of the session. Matheny starts by asking, what's it like when left eye can't see?
Notice the phrasing there.
Yeah, very literal. And Jay replies, foggy. So Matheny asks, and foggy like what?
Mm-hmm.
Jay says, a cloud. Matheny then says, and is there anything else about cloud? Jay says, it wants to float up.
Okay, watch what happens here.
Matheny asks, and can cloud float up?
Yeah.
Jay says, yes, it floats up and meets some friends.
Meets some friends.
Right. The Matheny asks, is there anything else cloud needs? Jay says, no. Matheny asks, and what happens next? And Jay says, it disappears.
What's fascinating here is what isn't in that dialogue. There is no psychoanalysis.
None. And then there's a final command from Matheny. He asks, can left eye see? Jay says, yes. Matheny asks, and can right eye teach left eye to move in unison with right eye?
Wow.
And Jay responds, not long now.
Unbelievable.
That is the end of the intervention. A lifetime of compounded grief and a catastrophic physical symptom apparently resolved by talking about a cloud floating away.
I know, it sounds crazy.
Wait. I am struggling to map this onto physical anatomy. I have to push back here for you listening, because an ocular muscle doesn't just unfreeze because of a poetic thought.
Fair enough.
If you tell someone with a paralyzed, inflamed eye to visualize a cloud meeting friends, it sounds like a placebo, like a parlor trick. How does a spoken metaphor physically rewire the nervous system's grip on an eye that hasn't moved in 6 months?
What's fascinating here is that to understand the physical release, we have to look at the neurology of what Matheny was doing, specifically through the lens of memory reconsolidation.
Okay, break that down for us.
In traditional talk therapy, if a therapist asks, "Why are you sad about the crash?" they're engaging the prefrontal cortex. That's the logical, analytical part of the brain.
Right.
The problem is the prefrontal cortex is also where we build our defenses and our rationalizations. Trauma isn't stored there.
It isn't.
No, it's stored in the limbic system, which doesn't speak in logic. It speaks in emotion, sensation, and imagery.
Ah, so asking why demands a logical answer for a problem that is fundamentally emotional and physiological.
Exactly. Matheny used clean language to scrub his own biases from the process. He didn't introduce the cloud. He didn't ask, why is it foggy?
He just asked, and foggy like what?
Right. This bypasses the prefrontal cortex and speaks directly to the limbic system's native language. When Jay recalled the trauma, his neural circuits entered a labile state.
Wait, labile meaning unstable or capable of being changed?
Yes. Neuroscience shows us that when a memory is activated, there is a brief window of a few hours where the neural pathway holding that memory becomes physically unstable.
Really? Physically unstable.
Yeah. And if you introduce a contradictory experience, a mismatch during that labile window, the brain literally synthesizes new proteins to rewrite the memory before it reconsolidates and gets stored away again.
Wow.
Matheny was handing Jay's subconscious the linguistic building blocks to create that mismatch.
So when Jay's subconscious visualized the cloud floating up and meeting some friends, it wasn't just a random daydream.
Not at all.
It was his brain structurally making peace with the childhood friend's memory. The brain was rewriting the traumatic memory pathway in real time.
Exactly. The physical trauma response, the frozen eye, and the inflammation was entirely tethered to that unresolved emotional loop. The autonomic nervous system was keeping that eye armored because the threat was unresolved.
Because it thought it still needed to protect him.
Right. But once the metaphor provided the resolution, the emotional loop closed. The amygdala stopped sending the danger signal. The parasympathetic nervous system took over, and the physical hold on the eye was instantly released.
It makes me think of a computer operating system that has completely frozen because a single corrupted program is caught in an infinite loop, causing the hardware fan to spin out of control.
Oh, that's a perfect analogy.
You don't take a wrench and try to physically force the fan to stop spinning.
Ugh.
You find the corrupted line of code, you debug it, and the hardware instantly calms down on its own.
Yeah.
The physical symptom, the paralyzed eye, was the spinning fan. The childhood grief was the corrupted code, and clean language was the debugging tool that spoke directly to the operating system.
And when you look at the physiological aftermath of that debugging process, the speed of the physical recovery makes complete sense.
Because the code is fixed.
Right. According to the source, the PTSD-induced anger that had plagued Jay for 6 months evaporated immediately because the nervous system was no longer locked in fight mode.
Wow.
The eye's mobility and vision returned during that same 30-minute window because the cranial nerves were no longer receiving the command to freeze.
And a source also notes that by the very next morning, the severe bloodshot redness had completely cleared up.
Just overnight.
Yeah, the physical inflammation literally vanished overnight.
Because once the cortisol and adrenaline stop flooding the system, the body's natural anti-inflammatory processes can finally do their job.
Matheny actually anticipated the skepticism, too.
He had to, right.
Yeah. The source highlights that he recorded a 4-year follow-up video interview with Jay in 1999, specifically to document the lasting physical effects.
4 years later?
4 years later, the vision remained intact, the ocular mobility was normal, and the compounded trauma had not returned.
Incredible.
This wasn't a temporary placebo high. It was a permanent neurological rewrite. And Matheny points out in the text that he has since used this exact method to help over 10 different clients regain their peripheral vision and depth perception after resolving unhealed traumas.
You know, the fact that multiple clients experience changes in peripheral vision and depth perception points to a much wider systemic reality about human physiology and stress.
Yeah, because we use the phrase tunnel vision casually all the time when we talk about being stressed at work or, you know, overwhelmed by a project.
Right. I've got television.
But the source implies this is far more than just a figure of speech. It suggests our emotional stress is literally physically altering the mechanics of our eyesight.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the text explicitly anchors this in survival physiology. people under chronic stress frequently exhibit actual measurable tunnel vision or fixed vision.
Measurable.
Yeah. When your brain perceives a threat and your amygdala doesn't distinguish between the existential threat of a garbage truck and the social threat of a furious email from your boss, it initiates a physiological survival cascade.
Wow. So it reacts the same way.
Exactly. And one of those involuntary responses is to restrict peripheral vision. The pupils dilate and the visual field narrows to focus entirely on the immediate predator ahead.
So you literally lose the ability to see the bigger picture because your body is preparing for an attack.
Yes. Now imagine living in a state of chronic, low-grade stress or carrying decades of unhealed emotional baggage.
Oh, man.
Your body traps that emotional state physically. It ceases to be just a passing feeling. It becomes a prolonged physiological stance.
A stance.
Right. And it forces us to ask an incredibly difficult question about our own health. How much of what we consider to be chronic physical ailments, everyday tension, or just the aches and pains of getting older, is actually an unhealed emotional root demanding our attention?
That totally recontextualizes every stiff neck, every clenched jaw, every random tension migraine.
It really does.
We are so conditioned to treat the physical symptom with a muscle relaxer, a painkiller, or a physical brace. We try to force the hardware fan to stop spinning, totally ignoring the fact that the body might just be holding onto a subconscious metaphor that hasn't been allowed to resolve.
The body is keeping the score.
And it is using tension and pain as a communication tool.
Sometimes the remedy isn't a deep tissue massage or years of endlessly analyzing the logic of your childhood. Sometimes it is simply finding the right non-threatening question to ask the limbic system.
Which brings us to the ultimate synthesis of this journey.
Let's hear it.
We started with a catastrophic collision on a highway, a man left shattered, his eye physically frozen by the compounding weight of two distinct traumas.
Yeah.
And we arrived at a 30-minute conversation about a foggy cloud floating away, a conversation that dissolved a lifetime of anger and physically restored a locked ocular muscle.
It is a stunning testament to the sheer neuroplasticity and adaptability of the human mind, provided it is given the correct linguistic environment to heal itself.
The source makes this beautiful observation near the end of the text. It suggests that our fundamental drive in life isn't always about endlessly dissecting our pain to find some grand philosophical meaning.
Right, we always look for meaning.
But sometimes the goal isn't meaning at all. Sometimes the goal is purely finding peace.
That's a great point.
Jay didn't need to logically deconstruct the unfairness of his friend dying of cancer or analyze the random probability of the truck hitting him. He just needed his internal cloud to float up, meet some friends, and disappear.
He needed biological resolution.
He needed his nervous system to receive the message that the event was over.
That it's safe now.
Think about your own physical landscape as you listen to this right now.
Yeah, take an inventory.
Think about your own internal clouds. Whether you are sitting at your desk, driving your commute, or just walking around, where are you holding tension? Is your jaw locked tight?
Are your shoulders creeping up toward your ears?
Is your vision feeling a little narrow, a little tunneled as you stress about an upcoming deadline? What unresolved mental loops might be running in the background of your operating system, causing your body to physically brace for an impact that isn't actually coming?
The implications of memory reconsolidation and the mind-body connection leave us with a profound concept to ponder long after this deep dive is over.
What's that?
If a man's unresolved grief over a childhood friend could literally physically paralyze his eye decades later, only to be triggered by the random chaos of a car crash, what other physical quirks, chronic pains, or unexplainable physical limitations are you currently living with, assuming they're just permanent parts of who you are? Wow.
What if they aren't physical defects or mechanical failures at all? What if they are simply old trapped memories, quietly waiting for someone to ask the right, simple question, giving them permission to finally float up, meet some friends, and disappear?
The medical scans and x-ray machines we rely on for clear, visible answers might just be missing the most important part of the picture. The real cure might just be waiting in the fog.